Patacana. Unique New York. All right, and this is what happens when we get two theater geeks together. Good morning, I am Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I'm ecstatic to be talking art with local theater artist Jeremy Marr, who is directing the Playcrafter Barn Theater's upcoming production of Yasmina Reza's Tony and Olivier Award-winning play, God of Carnage. Jeremy, welcome to Talking Art.
Thanks for having me here, Ben.
Yeah.
When you tout the play like that, I'm like, boy, let's try to do this thing justice.
Well, it's such a great play.
Yeah.
It's such a great play. I was so excited to see that Playcrafters was doing it. And you are at the helm. Tell us about God of Carnage for those who may not be familiar with it.
So the blurb, I guess, the easy description of it is that two couples get together one day to talk about an incident that happened on the playground between their sons, where one boy hit the other boy in the face with a stick and knocked out two of his teeth. And the evening starts off with these social niceties and how we have to be polite to get along. And by the end of it, they are screaming at each other, switching sides. We reveal all of the flaws in their relationship. And basically how our communication on getting along is really not sufficient.
Sure. That sounds great.
Right? Yeah, we don't want to go to the theater and watch people being nice all the time or behaving nicely. We want to examine this bad behavior and why is it bad.
Well, and one of the things that's so cool about this play to me was, you know, you have this incident between two children, and as a parent of young children, I totally understand things like that happen. And then, you know, as adults, we are supposed to be the calm, reasoned voices in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly we can devolve.
Yeah, especially because we don't really spend our lives in the culture like learning how to actually regulate our own behavior all the time. And how can we teach that to kids?
Right.
So, like, I think it really kind of gets at the root out of it. Everyone, all four of these people in these two couples have a different attitude towards, I mean, life itself, but how to parent, how to do this. And so everyone's coming at each other at it. So, I mean, and it sounds like this big dramatic thing, and that's how we're playing it, but where it's like we're two different shows. They're in this serious drama. We're watching them go through these ridiculous things, and we're laughing at that.
Right.
Right? This cool cathartic thing that happens.
Well, that's one thing that I find so interesting about her plays specifically, like with this and art are the two that I know most. You know, there is this, it's almost this kind of throwback, and she's a French writer, to like old French comedy of manners sort of stuff from Molière's times, where like these people are in society and we are laughing at how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
You know, the constructs that we've built around how we have to behave and do things, and it's great.
We have to get along.
It's so insightful.
We cannot really reveal our true selves to people, though, in order to get along.
It's, right.
They might hate me. Most likely they will. So it's nice when you can find some people who you can just open up to and do that. So.
Well, yeah. We all kind of carry these masks and walk around with these masks in our pockets and put on the right mask for the right situation. And
yeah. And some of us obviously have to do it more often and in different contexts than others, just you know, how things go.
Yeah.
It's, what, code switching, I guess, is the one thing we call it.
Yeah.
So everyone does it. Some people are forced to do it more. So we're exploring that a little bit, too.
That's awesome. Well, and you have a great group of actors to do that with. So tell us about the cast, because it's kind of a little who's who of the Quad Cities.
In a way, yeah. First of all, I want to say that I think God of Carnage is one of these shows that we could probably do once a year with a different cast every year and really explore it. There's a lot of people who are looking for these age range to play, and we have the skills to pull it off.
Yeah.
But in this case, we happen to get this group of people with Mike Schultz from the River City Reader, mm-hmm. who I've worked with before, but not in a directing capacity, if I recall right, which I have a horrible memory, so we'll see. Tom Taylor, so Thomas Allen Taylor, who worked with QC Theater Workshop a lot, yep. and the mic was over there too. And then Leslie Day, she's been doing a lot of shows over at Playcrafters lately. And then my friend Stephanie Burrow, who I worked with a lot with Prenzi Players, doing classical Shakespeare and Greek theater.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's a great point. Like, this is one of those plays that I think actors see and are like, mm-hmm. you know, it's a play that actors want to do because there's so much in it to chew on. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of scenery to chew on mm-hmm. and have fun with.
Yeah.
So you've got a great group, and there's a really interesting story with a couple of your actors in this production as far as the workshop.
Oh, now I am not sure what story you're referring to. Actually.
So, well, I was had communication from Mike.
Okay.
They had originally, they not originally, like the play's been done times before, but they were going to do this during the COVID season. Mike and Tom were going to do it at QC Theater Workshop. Oh. And then obviously that got canceled and the QC Theater Workshop was no more.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a little bit of a homecoming there for them,
okay.
which is really cool.
I need to talk to Mike and Tom about this because I don't think that's come up in
that's
rehearsal.
Funny.
Or, again, my faulty memory is rearing its ugly head. But I just feel like lucky to find some of the people because I guess one of my ideas with this is that since the show is about parenting in a way on some level, that I knew some people who were great actors, but that had taken time off to raise their kids and
sure.
stuff. So I just reached out to people and said, hey, I know your significant other has done a show. Are you thinking about dipping your toe back in? What do we do? So, then it just kind of worked out like that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't wait to see it. It's running, what are the dates? February 27th through March 8th?
Yes.
At Playcrafters.
And it's the Friday, Saturday evening shows.
Yep.
And the Sunday are the matinees, and those are
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock, and the evenings are 7:30.
Yep, you can get tickets at playcrafters.com.
Mm-hmm.
All the things. So people should definitely go see that. But you are also working on other things.
And, yeah.
And you're... Let's hold off getting into that.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, I have only worked with you as an actor before,
mm-hmm.
but I know you've also done a lot of directing. What attracts you to a script?
So I don't think this is a thing that I search for, but this shows that I tend to go towards have problematic elements, I think.
Sure.
Like, the very first show I was fortunate enough to direct was Taming of the Shrew. So, obviously, that right there with those kind of gender politics is very problematic. There's just something about that thing, like, how do we make these relevant to the culture and say something, but also make people laugh?
Yeah.
Laugh their asses off about it, because...
Yeah.
That's like, I just think that's the best way to break down these serious subjects, to figure out a way to dig at it, poke fun at it,
right,
and tear it down.
Well, and you've got a background in comedy because you've been in the improv scene around town for a long time.
Comedy Sports Quad Cities for it was like 17 years, whatever, and then I took a step back after the shutdown and everything like that, and I decided I'm just going to take a break from that for a while.
Sure,
but I get to do improv since I made connections around the country with people through that because Comedy Sports is nationwide. Occasionally, I'll travel out of town and I get to hop in on an improv show or
that's awesome.
Do some things. So yeah, that's fun. That's fun, and that's also like informed my acting and directing style, because a lot of times you have to feel like you have to come up with your background and your backstory and blah blah blah, all of these things. And like, there's amazing improvisers in this country that can do amazing realistic acting and scenes, yeah. And they haven't thought about that one bit.
Right.
So how much is it actually necessary, and how much is it just one way to do it?
Right. Well, and I think that's how I have always approached acting, is like, I have a toolbox of different ways to approach a script, and based on the style of that script and how it's worked, like, I'm going to take out the hammer for the hammer shows and the screwdriver for the screwdriver shows, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know? And some of them, I think, do require that very, you know, kind of intense research and, you know, but even with that research, I think... And I don't remember who I saw that said this, but it basically, like, I do all the research so that I can forget all the research.
Right. You know? Need to do the research to spark your imagination and creativity, but don't be beholden to it.
Right.
Right? When you hear the phrase, like, my character would never do that, and I'm just like, well, have you ever heard the phrase acting out of character?
Right.
Like, it's in the script. We got to find a way to make it work.
Yeah. And people do a lot of things when they're in situations that they don't expect themselves to be in, mm-hmm. that maybe they wouldn't do.
Yeah. 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 We spend time sitting back judging people, but was like, we've never actually been in that situation.
Yeah.
And it's going to be totally different.
But I mean, like, that's what I love so much about theater, both as an actor and a director, is I get to put myself in those situations and as an audience member, you know, and mm-hmm. see these people who are in these situations that maybe in my personal life I can't connect to. And I get to live in those shoes for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my worldview about the importance of theater is I get to live in that worldview for a bit, and I get to expand my worldview, and I get to be a little more empathetic to the world and to humanity mm-hmm. as a whole.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the ideal situation with live theater is that you become more empathetic, and it's a community building thing, and we understand. I mean, there is also a little bit of an ego stroke that can happen sometimes when you try to get recognized by things. But when you can, like, move a little bit beyond that and be like, let's all just figure it out and dig into it. And sometimes we have to yell and scream at each other. But in the end, we know if we're trying to get to something better, that's what we're trying to do. So let's do it. Right? Just go for it.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. And obviously, this is a very different play. But, like, I remember joking when I... because I first moved here in 2019, joking like, oh, I didn't realize the song Iowa Stubborn from the show The Music Man was a documentary before. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a knock on all the lovely Iowans that are here, but mm-hmm. like, there's things in that show that I'm like, oh, I see that right now. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a certain level of also gullibility, but then fury when you recognize that you've been taken in.
Yeah. No, and it's, you know, I think in my experience with you as an actor, you bring that sense of empathy, you know, and we talk a lot of times, like, when, you know, when you're playing the bad guy in a show, like... unless maybe you're Stephen Miller, you don't think you're the bad guy.
He thinks he's doing this. I don't want to talk about it.
No. But, like, you know, you're not sitting there like, I'm the evil one. Like, you are doing what's best for you and your family and what you and your worldview think is best at that time mm-hmm. and is the right thing to do.
Right.
You know, and you have played some characters and shows that I've had the chance to direct you in, who maybe have some questionable, but you never, like, you are always playing it from such a place of, like, this is a human being who is doing the best they can mm-hmm. in those moments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think a lot of the work with Prenzi players started me down that path where it was like this language that seems a little elevated and things like that, and like, but at the end of it, they are So they're rhyming. They're talking in rhyming couplets. But in the end of it, they're real people.
Yeah.
So how we have to, like, acknowledge the poetry that they're doing, but they'll sometimes make them human.
Right. Yeah. It's so funny. I've kind of been addicted to threads lately. And this person had posted recently something about, like, and this was a person who was, like, a literature teacher, like, mm-hmm. a high school, and was saying, like, we need to stop teaching young people books that are older than 50 years old. Like, we have books that are just as good in the last 50 years. Language has become more economical and more relatable to them. You know, and she laid out an argument for it that had merits. But I was thinking about, you know, with my son, when we put him to bed, like, we read a couple more age-appropriate books, and then we kind of finish off with a book that's above his grade level, mm-hmm. That helps him fall asleep. Mm-hmm. But, like, we've been reading, we read Call of the Wild recently, and we've been reading Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And the beauty of the language in those pieces, you know, and, like, her argument is that, like, kids don't get that language. They're not going to relate to it. Mm-hmm. There's so much beauty and like, I read Call of the Wild and White Fang in those books millions of times when I was a kid. I don't remember the language being elevated, but looking back as an adult, I was like, oh my gosh, these are just so beautifully written.
Yeah.
And I miss that.
Yeah. I will push back on them saying that the kids don't get it. There's some level where they get it and recognize it, because we didn't intellectualize language. Somebody right. looked at that thing and eventually, based on where they're at, like, that's a tree.
Right.
The word itself should have the meaning in it. And that's the thing we get back to with some of the classical
yeah.
theater stuff is, like, that's one of my faking tricks is, like, sometimes they're like, oh, you were really in character there now. And I was like, I was just really just kind of enjoying saying the words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't acting. Sorry.
No, no. And that is such a great trick. And, like, I don't know if you ever watched those old Robert Barton Shakespeare videos.
Oh, yeah, John Barton, Cecily Barry.
Yeah.
And
like, Ian McKellen is in them, and Judi Dench, and Patrick Stewart, and all the sirs and ladies, and they're all, like, chain-smoking while they're doing Shakespeare. But they're like,
It's so good.
That language is dripping from their tongues like honey.
Yeah. And when you have someone who has that experience in it, like with John Barton, I think it was even Patrick Stewart, in one of those or maybe a later interview that said something, is like, by the time I got done working on a monologue with John, every single letter in my monologue was circled or underlined or called attention to.
Right.
Because they're all important.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, we had a conversation recently about the importance of editing mm-hmm. and the importance of having that eye. And, you know, that, not that that is a modern versus classical thing, mm-hmm. but that when something is really well written, and I think this, you know, takes us back to God of Carnage, like, the language can be beautiful and economical at the same time, mm-hmm. and every letter is important mm-hmm. because it was, and as someone who's written plays, like, yes, I think about every word, and I listen to every word that's down, and I try to say those words and make sure it makes sense, and there's a reason for the words being in that order and those words.
Yeah, and I find that when a piece is really well written, we want to see what's happening between the lines and between the words, because I think that's really at the root of making theater poignant and connecting.
Yeah.
Is what are these people trying to get underneath the surface level of the words?
Right.
So, I mean, sometimes it's like, and you can see that with Shakespeare when he has, like, the rhythm written out, that some lines are written where there's a space. You're like, oh, what's going on there? You know, something's going on there, something's going on there. we'll circle this. Oh, suddenly they're alliterative here.
Yeah.
And why are they doing it?
Why do we have a feminine ending on this line?
Yeah, right? Because, you know, language is
yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
can't do it all the time. yeah. Set up the norm so you can break it to call attention to things.
Right.
I mean, and that's why I find myself, like, even, like, looking more at, like, storytelling outside of, you know, what I kind of grew up with, like classic Western literature and things like that. I want to, like, see the way other people are telling stories and what yeah. they bring to it, because it can only inform my own performances or helping people reach, you know, their truth.
Yeah.
And that is part of, like, my directing thing is I have to understand, I can't just assume somebody has certain experiences that they can draw from.
No.
To make live. So I have to ask them. And so it's a conversation. Like,
yeah.
how do you feel about this? What's that? See what they're bringing to it. And then kind of go like, okay, what about this? What about this?
Yeah.
And ask questions.
Well, and that, you know, that takes us back to that idea of a toolbox, because there's going to be lots of characters that I play that I have no experience with. I don't mm-hmm. know, you know, like, I've played people that have killed people or, you know,
yeah,
I don't know what right. that's like.
Yeah, we're not all and Christopher so, Lee where we know what the sound of a knife going into someone's back sounds
right.
like.
Oh my
like,
gosh, that's one of the craziest stories. but yeah, like, you know, and having, you know, a way to approach those things as an actor mm-hmm. and a way to, you know, when you look at, like you said, other cultures tell stories. You know, I was out in West Liberty the other day, and there's a puppet troupe out there, mm-hmm. Eulen Spiegel Puppet Theater Co., who's been around for 51 years mm-hmm. in West Liberty, Iowa. Mm-hmm. Like, amazing, amazing. And I got to see their workshop and all the puppets, and it was incredible. But, you know, they were talking about some of the different types of puppets that they use, mm-hmm. you know, that... You know, puppetry is something that's been around for so long, and the techniques that are used that you can incorporate in theater, mm-hmm. like it can add so much to the storytelling when you look at those other ways.
Yeah, some of those puppets only have one expression on their face,
yeah.
but somehow a puppeteer is able to manipulate that in such a way that you can see how the emotion does change in
yeah.
that, and that's pretty cool. Yeah. For some whatever reason, my brain jumped way left after you talking about the puppet.
Yeah.
'Cause I thought about when we were talking about improv. And this weird thing, it's like, you know, everyone kind of knows you're supposed to say yes to things and this and that for things, that you're supposed to go along with it.
Yeah.
And I had been, one of the things I did in this process, and I'm going to try to do the next process, is do some consent forward things, which
yeah.
is taking the time to think about how power structures in theater prevent people from making their best choices and things in that, and how come there has been weird things that happened in improv theaters across the country. And I was mm-hmm. like, yes and is all well and good. But if we don't
right.
give people the opportunity to set their boundaries and be able to advocate for themselves, it's opening up
yeah.
lines for abuse. So that's what we're doing in this thing. We started off being like, if at any time you need to do this, we will hit the button, we'll
yeah.
stop, we don't have to explain it, we'll just take a little break and do that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I know, and like, you know, we saw a lot of this start to come down or be exposed, like during the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I know as an actor growing up, there was that, like, if you were asked to do something or, you know, whether it was improv or not, like it was just like you were rewarded as an actor for saying like, yep, I'll do that.
Yeah. When you have somebody as responsible for your financial success or your career
right.
and they go, can I do this? They're asking for your consent, but there's a power underneath there where what is the cost of saying no?
Right.
That we don't talk about. So I just think that's like, I think you'll find that things will open up when we examine the traditional structures
yeah.
of how things work. And you know what? Let's tear some of the crappy stuff down a
yeah.
little bit and
yeah.
make it better.
Well, and that's every time that like every production that I've ever done, and like, you know, you've got kind of your short list of like, these are my favorite productions I've worked on. It's productions that have been the most devoid of that and most collaborative.
Yeah.
Of like kind of a hierarchy, mm-hmm. you know, like you have to have some sort of leadership.
Yes.
But they've been the most collaborative and have just had that open dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. We
have between actors, designers, directors.
Yeah. And I think part of it is making space to allow mistakes, not worry about getting it right away, to be open to when a mistake actually kind of, you know, hey, maybe it's right. something that'll work. And so when we're always focused on the end result, we can miss some things. And that's just kind of what I wanted to bring to this, is give people the chance to bring themselves to a role.
Yeah.
What else is there?
Well, and it's interesting. And there was a production I had worked on in New York of a new play. And we talked about this a lot in rehearsal, about the idea of like setting a production for performance versus within rehearsals, building your world and your actors up to the point where they are strong enough where you can say, now just go.
Mm-hmm.
And like have the free, like you guys all know this play and this material well enough.
Yep. You've set your personal boundaries. We can improvise, right, touch
I
within that.
I give you the permission as the director to keep exploring and making those choices.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you've got some more things coming up.
Oh, yeah.
You've got, let's talk about those real quick before we get you out of here.
Okay. I'm going to be directing The Minutes by Tracy Letts at the end of the year, in November, at the Black Box Theater. And I have auditions coming up March 14th. Actually, they're doing their whole season. March 14th and 15th are all the auditions for all the Black Box shows. There's a lot of exciting things there. And if I don't get cast in one other thing, I might audition for one or two of them. but I'm directing The Minutes, and so I have a sign-up form to sign up for a 10-minute slot to read some your spoken word pieces or monologues or stories, whatever you have to bring. It's another one of those drama things, but that reads as comedy, and it really, The Minutes touches on a lot of our American hypocrisy and how we have dealt with indigenous people and things like that. And, you know, how we take the plaque off the wall so we don't have to know what happened there. That's kind of what this is digging into.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I think it'll be a good show. And we're right in November, so I'm sure everyone will be excited to be digging in political ideas right around then.
Well, I cannot wait for that. I can't wait to see God of Carnage. Everyone, go see God of Carnage at Playcrafters February 27th through March 8th. You can get tickets at playcrafters.com. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks,
it's always a
Ben.
Pleasure to talk with you.
I feel like we could talk for days.
I know. I do too. we'll do that. We'll do that at a diner or something.
Yep, that sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks as always to Quad City Bank and Trust, our sponsor, and also to our rockin' producer, Josh Graves. Thank you, Josh. This has been a wonderful time. I'm Ben Gujan. This was Talking Art.